Hello and welcome to This Song, the podcast that asks artists about songs that changed them or shaped them or transformed them. I mean, look, the world is filled with good songs and even favorite songs, but every once in a while you come across a song and it does something magical. It shows you something about music, about the world, that you just didn't know was even possible. And in doing that, it helps you become more, you know, you. And these are the songs we love to hear about. This month, we have members of Moving Panoramas. They are the KUTX Artists of the Month for September, and they're going to all talk about songs that did just that, that transformed them and helped them kind of find their own musical voices. Before I get into the podcast, though, I'm going to take just a quick minute and ask on behalf of This Song, which is the podcast that you're listening to, that if you're listening to it, which you are because you're hearing these words, and you're digging it, and, you know, if you like it, maybe you could take a minute, less than a minute, to click on over to iTunes and leave a rating or a review, because it really helps us, and we'd be really grateful to you. Okay, back to the show. So, Moving Panoramas. They are the KUTX Artists of the Month for September, and they have a new record coming out October 2nd. The band is a trio. There's Leslie Sisson on guitar and vocals, Rosie Casto plays bass, and Karen Skloss is on the drums. And they have this really cool sound. It's got elements of pop, but it's really atmospheric, and there's some psychedelia mixed in there, and all these really cool parts interweaving, and the vocals are stunning, and it's very expansive, and it really does paint these like pictures, these moving panoramas, if you will. And it was extremely cool to interview the members of Moving Panoramas, because this is very much a band where everyone musically contributes. And when you listen to these interviews, you really get a sense of the fact that they all do contribute to this sound, and a real good idea of the origins of where Moving Panoramas is coming from. First off, Leslie Sisson. She is the singer and guitar player and main songwriter in the band, although they all kind of share songwriting duties. She has a song that she heard live at a show as a teenager, and it did what a really good song can do. It actually expanded her mind. So here she is, Leslie Sisson. We're here at KUTX Studios, and I'm with Leslie Sisson from Moving Panoramas, and I would love to hear about like an important transformational song for you.
All right. Well, I have the song.
Yay.
I have this song. When I was a teenager, I went to all ages shows in Dallas and Deep Ellum. That's where I'm from originally, Dallas. And a bandmate of mine, I started joining bands in high school in a town where there weren't very many musicians. So it was, you know, few and far between people that, you know, they were listening to Led Zeppelin, and that was cool at the time. And the Beatles, you know, this was about as far out as I could get.
Right.
And then there was this one guy in the band, his name is Ben, and he was into some really weird stuff. So he was like, you have to see this band. I'm going to go see them tonight at the Galaxy Club. And I was like, okay. And it was an all-ages show, so I was young enough to get in. There were about 10 people there, and they were called Bedhead. There, the Galaxy Club has like a step up level, and I remember like during this one song that they played, I had to sit down because it really floored me, and it was called Bedside Table, and that has been the song that has changed me. It totally changed the way I listen to music and the way I write music. And after that, I was obsessed with them, and then I found out their influences, and just, you know, because of Bedhead, it opened a whole new world of music for me.
Wow.
The guitars, the vocals, everything about it just totally moved me. And the song builds and builds and builds and builds, and then it just has this explosion. And that was when I was like, I had to sit down on that step and just like put my hand my hands on my head. I'm just like, what is happening? What is going on? This is amazing.
When you talk about it, you actually put your hands on your head. Like, it actually blew your mind wide open.
Totally.
Was it making you feel something different, like something you hadn't felt before?
Exactly. It was very physical. I was like, I could feel it like in my chest. It was so loud. But it was also the notes and how they were like discordant with each other, but still making something really beautiful. I didn't cry, but I could have cried.
It sounds like you were pretty near at that point of like emotional kind of openness.
Yeah, it totally opened my heart in a weird way. That's cheesy to say, but it did. It opened my brain and my heart to a whole new world of music. And I always cite them as my favorite band.
So what was it like before? Like, how did you kind of view music and what it could do and guitar?
I went from being Juliana Hatfield to being Matt and Bubba Cadane in female version in some ways. I was listening to The Sundays, which I loved. Mm-hmm. Harriet Wheeler was like my favorite singer. It's that little souvenir of a terrible year which makes my eyes feel sore. Oh, I never should have said the books that you read. But it was very girly, tough, like Liz Phair, 90s.
This was the 90s. This was the time of like the power pop female artist.
It was
or
great.
Folky female artist. Yeah.
But that's all I had access to, just whatever was on MTV. We didn't have the internet.
Did you go home and try to learn Bedside Table? Did you go home and take it with you and say like, okay, now we're going to figure out.
Yeah. It was funny. I didn't. At the time, I wasn't, I was in band growing up and I was, I read music and was very, musically inclined as a child, playing piano and flute and cello. And I decided that I didn't want to dissect songs.
Uh-huh.
And I started to go to music school after I got out of high school. And I realized the more I tried to become a technical musician and learn theory, it was taking me away from playing through my heart, which is strange because a lot of jazz musicians, they do theory and everything and they have a different way of like finding that zone. But with Bedhead, I did try to learn some of the songs. Yeah. But I didn't like try to take too much out of it. I was trying to like, I would learn them. And then I remember like, especially for playing, I would play along to the records and try to write my own parts to it.
Oh, right.
So
on.
That's how.
As a way to get into writing your own music, kind of. Yeah. When you've been writing your own songs, do you ever feel like you've been trying to get that same feeling across in a song, or like you've gotten that same kind of bedside? Like, where you write a song and you go like, I think I might be writing my own version of Bedside Table. Not like a copy of the song, but just like trying to get that feeling across to someone else.
I would like to be able to do that. I don't know. I mean, they were doing something totally original to me at that time, and I'd like to think that we are original, but there is a song that is on our new record called Always that slowly builds. Mm-hmm. And I do find myself doing that, like saving stuff till the end a lot of the time. I feel like maybe subconsciously I was doing that with that song because it starts off with just one guitar. And the thing about Bedhead that I really love is how simple the vocals are, but they still really like pack a punch,
Yeah.
And so I like to save, sometimes I like to save the vocals. I like to be very minimal in my vocals and then save some of the flashier stuff, or maybe not do it at all.
Yeah.
I hadn't really heard anybody do anything like that. And when I sleep, oh, you are dreaming. And when
And below us, you can hear the Moving Panorama song Always from their new record, One, which is out on October 2nd. And there it is, that build. And I just love the image of a teenage Leslie sitting in this nearly empty club, watching a band play and just having her mind blown wide open. I mean, so much so that she has to like sit down. It's that powerful. And when she got up, she was never the same. And you just never know when these experiences will happen. And any of you who are in bands now, I mean, you can't really worry all the time about people coming to your shows. I mean, you never know when you're going to totally change someone's life. There were only 10 people at this show, but it's something that Leslie will take with her for her entire life. That's so cool. Okay, next up is Karen Skloss. She is the drummer, and she has a song that really helped her understand the importance of feel and vibe. So here she is. So I'm here at KUTX Studios with Karen Skloss, and I was wondering if you have like an important slash transformational song that you'd like to share.
An important slash transformational? Well, now this is an interesting question, which I actually got to prepare for just a slight bit. And I spent a lot of time thinking about it because music itself has been so transformational for me.
Yeah. And I find that like when you ask someone this question and you say like one song, they go like, I don't know, there's like 1 million songs. But yeah, just hearing about one is like, yeah, it'd be really cool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, after a lot of thought, I kind of settled on Anemone by Brian Jonestown Massacre. You should be picking me up. I realize, you know, sort of the criteria for me for a transformational song is that it has a kind of purity to it, mm-hmm. that there's just a very clear emotion that's being conveyed by the song. And those are the songs that I love the most. And there's sort of two different ways that can come out is, you know, through just gorgeous lyrics. And it's almost, you know, poetry, lyrical poetry. Or in the case of this song, the arrangements and just the way that all the elements come together in the song just strike the most perfect chord. And especially, you know, I think it's a very personal thing.
Yeah.
But there's something about the way that this song comes together that just, I heard it and all I ever wanted to do was just hear it again. You know? Yeah.
Did you listen to it on repeat at some point? Like where you just, and it ends and then you'd start it again?
Yes. Yeah. It's one of those songs because there are some songs, especially I think once you start playing music, you kind of turn into a freak and you just want to really listen to songs and understand them. And there's a tendency to just, you can kill music sometimes. And I've been guilty of that.
Yeah.
But I never have been able to kill this one. And yeah, I mean, I can just listen to it over and over again. And the feeling that it gives me is just, it's just a very happy feeling, which I love. But yeah. It's actually kind of a song about, you know, learning the value of a relationship or maybe, you know, not really knowing until it's too late. And
you never miss your water until the well runs dry
kind of
sentiment.
Yeah.
But it sounds like despite the lyrics, it makes you feel
kind of elated.
Kind of elated and which is an interesting dichotomy that you bring up about the difference between how the lyrics make you feel, which is like basically the songwriter saying like, this is what I'm thinking. And then it's how the music makes you feel, which is very pre-verbal, like it's deeper than the lyrics in some way, I feel like. It's because we were feeling music before we were coming up with words to songs, you know?
Yeah, actually, just yesterday, a friend of mine was telling me that Darwin theorized that language was actually the product of music, and that maybe music came first. So, you know, we were like a bunch of birds or something, eight birds.
That's my next band name, by the way. The Eight Birds.
and then, you know, at a certain point, the actual
structural language came in.
Out of the music.
I can see that for sure.
Isn't that the coolest
idea? That's really cool.
Like, go Darwin. What a great thinker.
He had a lot of good thoughts. It's so interesting. Like, I'm a singer, and so when I listen to music, it's always like lyrics and melody, and then I, you know, like, I'll dig on the general rhythmic thing or fall in love with a bass line here and there. But I'm married to a drummer, and when he talks about music, it's like it starts with the drumming, and I love that perspective, because I never start there and then work my way out. So I would love to hear kind of your take on the drumming in Anemone.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, when it comes just to Brian Jonestown Massacre, you know, in general and kind of around that time period, you know, they're pulling from all these different kinds of music, where it's not just about straight up, like, American rock and roll.
Right.
And maybe that was part of what was really speaking to me, because I was, you know, starting to learn about, like, you know, Fela Kuti and, you know, crazy stuff that I never heard of before, you know, and finally getting interested in, you know, American blues and all that kind of stuff, and just piecing it all together. And on that record, and in this song, there's just this really cool fabric of different kinds of percussion. It's not like the kind of percussion that you're used to hearing in a lot of straight up rock music. I mean,
so when you say percussion, you mean like other percussive instruments other than just like a drum kit?
Yeah, there are many, many layers to the percussion, and they're all really simple, but they all kind of come together and add up. And they play off of all the other, you know, rhythm, the bass, and all the other pieces of the song.
Do you find yourself, when you're coming up with drum parts or, like, coming up with, you know, thinking about maybe recording, going back to that song and thinking, like, what would Brian Jonestown Massacre do? Not in I'm going to take
not
that
in a derivative
part.
Way.
Yeah, in a derivative way, but more like, oh, well, I can take from here, I can take from here. We could layer this, we could do that.
I would say, you know, definitely in when it comes to practicing sometimes, and writing, when I'm practicing, sometimes I'll just, you know, play along with some stuff just to sort of try and understand what they're doing. But then, I don't know, I mean, maybe because I'm not trained, you know, I almost can't copy, you know, I have to just do it my own way.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe part of that's by design, like I'd rather just invent it my own way and be inspired by, instead of trying to be like the perfect, you know, executor, perfect technical drummer. I'm just more interested in playing with heart.
Leslie had a similar thing that she talked about almost going into music in college and then finding out that the more she knew and the more she could dissect and pull apart and do this thing, the less heart she found that she could insert into there, which is, you guys both come from a very similar place, it sounds like, of like, I want to do it, but I want it to be about feel as opposed to like technical accuracy.
You know, I've never really had a lot of formal musical training. And I think I had like one drum lesson from a friend who was in this band called the Prima Donnas in Austin. And And that was about it. And so I feel like at most of the drum lessons that I've had have been from listening to music. And there's something about the beauty and simplicity of the percussion in this song, and in most of the stuff that I really love, that really spoke to me.
Yeah.
And still speaks to me. You know, just doesn't need to be showy, doesn't need to be flashy, but it's still very big.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate
it. Thank
you. And yeah, this was awesome.
Yeah.
Yay. Below us, you can hear the moving panorama song Magic, and you can hear some of that kind of percussive layering, Brian Jonestown vibey type stuff. And I just want to say that I interviewed each member separately, so it was really actually cool for me when both Karen and Leslie brought up the same idea of not wanting to deconstruct the music too much, not wanting to overstudy it or overthink it, because for them, that takes them further away from the feeling, which is where they kind of want to live. And I guess that's why they're in a band together then. And finally, bassist Rosie Casto. Rosie has a song that she heard when she was super young, and it really made her understand that the way a song is arranged is as important as anything in creating the feeling of that song.
I'd probably say the most important song to me is The Rain Song by Led Zeppelin. I remember the first time I heard that song, I was driving back from Kansas with my parents. We'd gone to see my grandparents, and it was just such a long trip.
And so how old were you when you were in this car with your parents?
Probably about 8.
8 years old.
8 years old. And I remember just watching, you know, the trees go by and the streets go by, and it was dark. And then I was listening to Led Zeppelin. And they were always the band that if I didn't know what to listen to, I would just put their whole entire collection on shuffle and would just listen to it all. And I remember specifically when The Rain Song came on and just having this feeling of like, wow, this is one of the coolest songs I've ever heard.
Now you're 8 years old and you're already hip to Led Zeppelin, first of all, which is kind of a big deal. No Taylor Swift, no Miley Cyrus for you.
My parents were very adamant about showing me the music they liked, and it was a lot of classic rock. And
yeah.
So I just grew up on like the Beatles and Peter Gabriel, AC/DC. Those were like my favorite bands. And so I was never into any of the newer stuff.
So when did you start listening to Led Zeppelin? When you were like...
When I was about 8.
Yeah. So that's about the same time that you hear The Rain Song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so you're in this car and you're traveling up to Kansas. And were you playing music at the time? Or were you mostly listening at 8 years old?
I had started getting interested in possibly playing. My dad is a guitar player. And so I've always had music around the house. And I hadn't started playing music yet, but it was something I was definitely interested in. And only a few years later, when I was 10, I started playing drums.
Okay.
And so it was just kind of like the beginning point.
So, but you were an avid listener by the time you were 8. You were like a deep, deep catalog listener.
I mean, I remember when I was in the 3rd grade, I had an AC/DC backpack for school. So I was super into music by that time.
And so you're in the car and you're 8 and you're looking out the window and Rain Song comes on and you'd been listening to Led Zeppelin, like on the ride. So do you remember what it was about that song as opposed to every other, as opposed to Black Dog or something?
Just the feeling it invokes. It's such a, it's happy, but it's sad. And it's got this great build in the song. And, you know, later years when I listen to it, you can look at from more of an analytical point. But the way the song flows just seemed to fit the moment perfectly. And whenever I'm upset or sad or it's a hard time, I always know that that's the song to go to, because just the way it's structured and the way that the song is, it always just seems to make those moments better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's really, it's the feel and like the arrangement of that song.
Definitely.
That really, and you kind of fell in love with it before you knew really anything about music or structure.
Exactly.
Or arrangement, which is what the really good songs do. They hit you when you don't have to know anything about it.
It is so just spectacular the way it is. Has been created, because it starts very soft. It's just starting with guitar, and then you have vocals coming in.
It is the springtime of my loving, the second season I'm glowing. You are the sunlight in my growing, so little warmth I've felt before.
And then each little section builds. They add strings, and then you add a little bit of drums. And then finally you get to the point where it's just reached the peak. And it explodes into this great big thing. And then it... starts over again, just calms back all the way down until it kind of ends. So it's very much a journey.
It has an arc, like an actual...
Mm-hmm. And a lot of songs do that, but there's also a lot of songs that are just, like, going the entire time. They're just straight plowing through the song, and they don't have as much of an obvious change as that song does.
And when you started playing drums, and now you're a bass player, you started playing bass.
Yes.
Was that a song that you went to, like, one of the first songs you wanted to learn, or?
You know, no. At that time, when I started playing, I was into more of a pop punk type of thing. I was about 10, and I had just discovered, like, bands like Green Day and some of the other stuff that was popular at the time.
Sometimes I give myself the creeps. Sometimes my mind plays tricks on me. It all keeps adding up. I think I'm cracking up. Am I just paranoid?
So I was more into learning stuff about that, and it wasn't until I was maybe 13 or 14 and was playing bass, had been doing it for a few more years, and had really started learning a whole bunch of songs that I decided to actually revisit the song and be like, oh, wow. I can learn this now. I can.
I have the ability to play along. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was such a really cool thing for me, especially with all the songs that I like. It's so cool to be able to actually learn it and pick it apart and see what makes this song work. And that definitely helps me as a bass player myself, because, or even just as an all around musician, because then you can learn how songs are created. It's like an engineer when they want to learn how something is. You know, how something works, they take it apart. And so being able to learn songs and being able to take it apart, you learn the craft. And it's definitely helped me with my writing and being able to bring this into Moving Panoramas. And
right. And arrangement-wise, do you see any connections between kind of that rain song arrangement and the stuff that you guys are doing in Moving Panoramas? Like,
I could say so, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the whole build. I think songs with builds are a whole lot, they have more dynamic to them.
Yeah.
And I definitely see that in some of our songs, like Please is one of them. We start with just guitar, and then the band comes in, and it's just Leslie singing. And then with the second verse, I'll add some vocal parts. And then we go into a heavier part, a different part, but there's no vocal on it yet. And then we go back to kind of that lighter, not as heavy of a riff, and then at the very end it's just kind of like this big finale.
Yeah.
So definitely being able to see the rise and fall songs. I can definitely relate that to being the Rain song being the first one that I was actually like, oh, I noticed this.
I hear it and I feel it, and I see that arc. Yeah, I love it. I like music that takes me on a journey, just like a story does,
or exactly.
You know, like it's the same kind of thing that I want out of music. Yeah. Before we go, we should mention you're talking about all these musical experiences when you were really young, and you're still like relative to me.
Yeah.
Very young. You're the oldest you've ever been. But how old are you now?
19.
Man, thanks so much. I think we got the great. This is a great interview. I can't wait to put it together.
And, awesome.
Yeah, thanks for coming in.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, totally. Okay. And this is the song Please that Rosie was talking about. It has that build, that Rain song-esque build happening, which is just a beautiful thing, man. And Rosie, I mean, I think you probably caught from the interview, Rosie's young. She's 19 years old. She's younger than I am, for sure. And it was so nice to talk to someone who is so young but had such a nice grasp of music and what it can do. I mean, I was definitely not that hip at 19 to what was happening in music. I can't wait to see what she does. And that's it. We've come to the end of yet another This Song episode. This Song is a production of KUTX 98.9 Austin. This episode was produced and edited by myself, Elizabeth McQueen, David Sanger, and Art Levy. Welcome to the This Song team, Art. The interviews were recorded by me. Special thanks to Peter Babb, who books all the bands in Studio 1A. Like I've said before, we have like 300 a year, and we record them all, and sometimes we get video, and you should totally check out our website, ktx.org, to see all of that amazing stuff that we get. And like I said a couple times, Moving Panoramas are the KUTX Artist of the Month, and I encourage you to go to KUTX.org and check out all of their Artist of the Month features. We have them coming into Studio 1A. They'll be doing a My KUTX. We'll do a Song of the Day on them and an Austin Music Minute. So please feel free to check out all of the cool Moving Panorama stuff going on at KUTX.org. Our theme song is Mahout by Austin's own Hardproof Afrobeat. Such a good band. You can email us at thissong@kutx.org or tweet us at thissongkutx. You can subscribe to This Song along with the other KUTX podcasts, which are Liner Notes, Song of the Day, and Austin Music Minute. Well, you can subscribe to all of those on iTunes or follow us on Stitcher. And we know you're busy, but if you have a moment, we'd love a rating or a review for any of the podcasts, really. So thank you so much for listening, and I'll talk to you next time.